Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. During his presidential campaign, Donald Trump called for a full or partial ban on Muslim immigration. He talked about a national registry for Muslim immigrants. Now, whether any of that will come to pass or even pass constitutional muster, we don't know. But we do know this about the incoming president. He named Lieutenant General Michael Flynn as his national security advisor. The retired general has said Islam is a political ideology hiding behind a religion, and that fear of Muslims is rational. So these are interesting and possibly challenging times for Muslim leaders in our society. So today, we thought we'd hear from one of them. Imam Taymullah Abdar-Rahman grew up in Roxbury, performed in a successful R&B group, had several run-ins with the law, and converted to Islam. He's now an imam and chaplain at Harvard University and joins us in our studios. And Imam, welcome to Radio Boston. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Let me back up and just talk about this election. Okay. Many Muslims have said they are feeling fearful after the election of Donald Trump. I'm wondering, how are you feeling?
Well, I think I'm feeding off the energy of the constituency I serve, right? A lot of the students at Harvard University are full of angst, anxiety, fear, resentment. A lot of them are not able to work. You know, they have to get extensions on lessons and studying. So I think that there's a lot to be concerned about, and we have to be careful not to be reactionary, but we also have to be very critical going forward.
Now, I'd like to hear about these students. Who are they? Are they generally, are they American Muslims or foreign Muslims? Who's coming to you with concerns?
Right. So they're American-born Muslims who have parents who immigrated here 30 years ago or so. But I think, Anthony, it's important to also note that, you know, the Arbilis, a Syrian family, came here, you know, in 1878. A professor and his six sons, they started a Star of America newspaper, and the people who built the railroads here in the 1920s were Yemeni Arab Muslims. You know, so we have a history here as Muslims in this environment. I mean, I don't think it's anything new to say that, you know, we've just gotten here in the 70s and 80s. We've been here. And a lot of these students are feeling as though, hey, I'm an American. When something happens, I feel like a victim as well when there's a terrorist attack. But then there's also the dual narrative of them feeling as though they have to deflect suspicion and the umbrella of, you know, accusations that come along with those attacks.
Terrible pressure to be taking on. So what do you tell them when they bring these concerns to you and about having to bear the burden of such suspicions?
Well, I think, first of all, as a person of faith and as a counselor, a chaplain, my job is to help them see the larger picture, right? To see that, you know, as Paul Harvey said, in times like these, there's always been times like these. And that it's our job to remain faithful and to remain committed to the process. And I think that, you know, in college life, activism plays a huge part. So we're committed to voting local. We're committed to activism. We're committed to critiquing the administration and everything it needs to be critiqued for and supporting what's good.
Yeah. I would love to get a little bit about your story because you're very much of this city. You grew up in Roxbury. Tell me about your family, what life was like for you growing up in Boston.
Well, I come from a single family, a single parent household. My mom was a breadwinner, a nurturer, a person who loved us all, gave us all the hugs and kisses we needed. Myself, my five siblings. And basically, I grew up in the 80s during Reaganomics. Things were tough. A lot of violence, a lot of drugs. So we had to find a way to navigate that and still try to find a way to make a living for ourselves and do better.
Yeah. And so you ended up on the wrong side of the law, I guess I could say, for a while, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I got into the singing group Perfect Gentlemen in 89, and I did that for a few years. But what I found was that, you know, I was a teenager, 16, 17 years old. That lifestyle in Roxbury in the streets was calling me.
Yeah.
So I left the group in 92, went back to the streets, became a teen father, sold drugs, got into some violent confrontations. And I lived that way off and on for maybe almost a decade before I had a change of heart.
And what, you know, this is such an interesting question that I've asked a lot of folks. What caused that change of heart? Because, of course, there are young people who are drawn to that life all the time, often for very understandable reasons, but there's often something that gets them out of that life.
Indeed.
What was it for you?
For me, I think it was several things. I think, number one, I always had a supportive household. My mom always supported me. My siblings, my one brother and four sisters were a support system for me. Whenever I would fall, they were there to pick me up and encourage me. And I think if you don't have a purpose-driven life, like many youth, urban youth don't, then you're more susceptible to be at risk. So for me, that was a mitigating factor. In addition to that, I had a newborn son, right? And I knew that if he was going to be better than me, then I had to do better for myself. And those two things proved to be the catalyst for me to try to change my life.
Yeah. You know, I hope you don't mind. I want to play some music because you mentioned for a period you were part of a band called Perfect Gentlemen, right?
Indeed.
So this is a track from Perfect Gentlemen. This is called Ooh La La, I Can't Get Over You.
Right.
So this is your piece. So we're just going to listen for a little bit here.
Okay.
So, Tamil, I just have to. There you are in the Perfect Gentleman, but I'm just wondering, you know, going from the notoriety of being in a singing group like that back to Roxbury, that must have created some challenges, right?
Yeah, I was traumatized, to say the least.
Yeah.
You know, we were on Oprah Winfrey on the cover of Golden Graham cereal, and then you're thrust back on the block, so to speak.
Right.
And so there was a lot of times I had to prove my manhood, quote unquote, because if you don't, then you become a victim easily in that environment.
Yeah. So I want to learn more about your conversion to Islam. Tell me a little bit about that route.
Well, I had a teacher in the sixth grade. Her name was Zuhaira Bilal, and she kind of planted the seed. She used to talk to us about life and about, you know, nature, and she used to take us when she donated blood, and we used to be fascinated by her lifestyle. She planted the seed, you know. I got distracted for the next 10 years or so, but a guy I was running with, his name was Apple. We thought his name was Apple, and we were on our way to do a home invasion, and we sat outside for an hour. We couldn't figure out which house it was, and it was a specific guy we were looking for, and we didn't know which house it was. And so after an hour, I decided I'm going home. I'm tired. So I went home. Apple ended up that night going to a house party in Brookline, Massachusetts, where he got into a shootout there in the party in Brookline. Mm. And so he ended up going to jail, doing 13 years. And it was during that time that he rediscovered his Islamic identity. He was born Muslim. And so then he began to write me and tell me about, you know, the benefits of Islam and the benefits I could edify myself with spiritually. I wasn't listening for the first maybe 5 years. And then after some time, I started going through my own struggles with my son and just in life in general as I matured. And so I ended up, you know, giving him an ear, which led to me converting in 1999.
Wow. And now, 1999, of course, before the terrorist attack of 9/11, what was that like for you after those attacks?
Well, I guess after the attacks, it was sort of like it feels right now, right? A lot of despair, a lot of not knowing what the future holds, but also knowing that there's a place for American Muslims here and that, you know, we've been victimized as well. Whenever these people commit these acts, you know, they're committing them against all of us. And so there's a desire to create a platform where we can speak out and build alliance and coalition with those who are like-minded.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the move over to Harvard, where you serve as the Muslim chaplain at Harvard. I mean, of course, from Roxbury to Harvard Square, it's just a few miles. But some might say it's also a world away those two worlds are separated by a great distance. How do you feel about that? How do you close that distance, I guess, between the world that you grew up in and where you're serving now?
That's important. I think that's a great question. I think because a lot of times Harvard University is known for venerating awareness on par with action, right? So if we know something and we're educated about it, sometimes we feel as though we've done all we can do. But I think it's my job, having that experience with real poverty, with real violence, and real, you know, some civil liberties being violated, to bring that experience on campus. And sometimes I do it and I speak about things that make people uncomfortable. Faculty, you know, students, people who come from local communities for the Friday sermon. And I do that on purpose to try to bring that brutal reality in their face.
Yeah. And how do they respond?
Mostly positive, right? Because
mostly.
But you know, sometimes there's some pushback along the lines of, you know, we're doing what we can, and that's important to acknowledge that, you know, a lot of times people are trying the best with the tools that they have, but you know, knowing something and acting on it, two different things.
Well, Imam Taymullah Abdur-Rahman is a chaplain, a Muslim chaplain at Harvard University. Tay, thanks so much for joining us today. We really, really appreciate it. I look forward to talking to you more about these issues in the weeks and months and years ahead.
Thank you, Anthony.
Good to meet you. Stay with us. Coming up, writer Michael Chabon about his new book, Moonglow. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.